This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Good day, late but worth the wait as always. What's going on, everybody? Welcome into First Take. I'm Molly Karam Rose, joined as always by Stephen A. Smith and Max Kellerman. And look who's here. I'm going to give props to Dame in about 2 seconds. But we've got the future Hall of Famer, Vince Carter, with us, who logged 22 seasons in the association. Can we talk about how incredible that is? The most in NBA history. Vince, right? Thank you so much for being with us. We're so excited to have you, and we appreciate you gracing us with our presence. We're going to have a lot of fun today, guys. Let's get after it. And I want to start with Dame, continuing his tear. He has been unreal, joining Will Chamberlain, an exclusive 60-point club, dropping 61 in Portland's win against Dallas. Dame putting in work. They essentially control their own fate, fellas, but are still fighting for that 8th spot. The Blazers get the 8th seed with a win against the Nets or losses by Memphis, Phoenix, and San Antonio. If they handle their business, they'll face the Lakers in the first round, and we are here for all of it. Stephen A., talk to me. You think L.A. should legitimately be scared of Portland?
Hell yes, they should. They have a lot to be concerned about when it comes to the Portland Trailblazers, and mainly because of what we witnessed last night. See, these are the kind of things that Damian Lillard is capable of doing on any given night. Now, the brother's averaging 29 for the season, okay? This brother's all world. I thought he was first team All-NBA last year, and that he deserved strong consideration for that, because Steph Curry had missed some time. We all know that Steph Curry is the greatest shooter in the world, okay? But when you talk about a point guard with shot-making ability, Damian Lillard is the one dude that can challenge him to some degree. He's just sensational, particularly when he gets hot. He's got tremendous poise. He ain't scared of anything. His range is off the charts, and he's got a lot of heart. And he just said, y'all must have forgot who the hell I am. Well, you know what? I see him. I damn sure see him. He's that special. But C.J. McCollum is no scrub. This dude is a sharpshooter as well. We can't ignore him. Carmelo Anthony, my brother, did you see the performance that he put on last night? He dropped 26 last night on 10 of 17 shooting. It was his best game as a Blazer. Carmelo Anthony, the epitaph was written a bit prematurely, dare I say, as I said to a lot of folks. You still got Nurkic back. He's looking healthy. Gary Trent has been making shots all over the place. Just had 11 last night, but we know what he's been doing since the bubble arrived. When you look at Portland, they have athleticism. They have exceptional perimeter shooting. They have explosive players. They have an elite backcourt, and they have experience. You couple that with the fact that Avery Bradley is not there any longer because he elected not to play in the bubble. No shade there. He's got a 6-year-old that had respiratory issues. According to the reports, we wish him and his family nothing but the best. But him being gone and Rondo being out, even though he's expected to be back, let's call it what it is. If you can make shots and you have elite guard play, you can beat the Lakers. I am very, very worried about the Los Angeles Lakers in the first round if they play the Portland Trailblazers. I'm not going to go as far as to say it's a foregone conclusion. They'll lose, but they could. And here's the prediction I will make. That particular series would go 7 games, in my estimation. The floor is yours.
There is a lot of reasons for the Lakers to be worried about the Blazers, and I'm a Lakers fan. Number one, just the fact that we're in a bubble, there was a stoppage. Like the last time there was a work stoppage or a shortened NBA season, that's the last time in 8-1 when the Knicks got all the way to the finals. Like weird things can happen in seasons like this. Number two, the Blazers, when you look at it, Stephen A., why were you calling for Lillard to leave Portland? The same reason a lot of people were, because how do you get what he needs there? Guys don't sign in markets like Portland normally, right? A type A, real first rate free agent. So a couple things needed to happen. First of all, because he had McCollum as his wing, as his Robin, who else could step up? Well, Nurkic. Two things had to happen. Nurkic had to get healthy and continue to ascend. Check, that's happened. And then they needed a reliable third guy on offense. And Carmelo Anthony, has, you said that people have written his epitaph, that was me, Carmelo Anthony has proven the doubters like me wrong. He's not just a 15, I said he's a 15-minute a guy, night guy, ninth guy on someone's bench, because in this era of specialization, it's not so much iso ball anymore, especially with his declining physical abilities just with age. He can't iso your way to a 50-win season with him as the centerpiece anymore. What can he do? He's not like some awesome catch and three, shoot three-point shooter, and he's not a defender, so he's not exactly a 3-and-D guy, right? So what can he do? Well, he's showing what he can do. He got himself in shape, and he's become not just a 15-minute-a-night guy, not just a valuable rotation piece on a good team, but he's playing like a good NBA starter at a position where it's hard to find good starters on a powerhouse team, because right now the Blazers are powerhouse. And then, of course, I buried the lead. The number one reason, I said one, two, three, number one reason above all of this is Damian Lillard is playing like an MVP. He's putting on a show every night, an MVP show. He did it again last night, and they needed it, including hitting the game-tying shot, which, you know, took a minute to go in. But, like, with the game on the line on a night where McCollum wasn't great, he's coming through. For all those reasons, they're really live, and yet Stephen A., I'm a little less worried than you, primarily because I don't think they play the kind of defense that's going to beat the Lakers in a seven-game series. But as a Lakers fan, man, I don't want to see the Blazers.
And I agree with you both. And I'm going to say this. I'm concerned in the first game or two, and then there will be adjustments. We know that in the playoffs, it's about adjustments. And Dame Lillard's going to do his thing. I see the Lakers now double-teaming Lillard and now putting the onus on who? Maybe Carmelo, maybe CJ. But CJ has to get healthy first. Because if he's not healthy, you're going to expect Dame to score 60 or let's say 50 or more in a seven-game series. Like Stephen A., you said, they go seven games. Well, what if they don't? He has the ball. Now you put the ball in Carmelo's hands and you're going to expect him to score and play this way all the time, which he's very capable of, don't get me wrong. But I think they need CJ healthy because, like you said, they do not play defense like that. So we're gonna have to outscore him. At some point, I'm gonna double team Dame and get the ball out of his hands and make maybe not 100% healthy CJ beat me, or maybe even Gary Trent Jr. the play, because they don't have that experience as the others, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Well, listen, a couple of things. Number one, with Dame's range, it's pretty difficult to just get the ball out of his hands because he can step 10 feet beyond the three-point line and come get the ball and literally be a threat. I know that, but I'm saying that it's still difficult to get the ball out of his hands. You can still lock him up. You can still contain him to some degree in terms of dictating the kind of shot he ultimately gets. But because he has the range and the ultimate green light, he's going to take those shots, and we know he's capable of making it. That's number one. Number two, and more importantly, you know this, Vince, by the way, doing a great job. I've seen you on TV with TNT. Keep it up, my brother. Here's the deal. If you look at what transpired until recently, the Lakers were one of the worst offenses in the bubble. They weren't scoring 100 points. They were struggling to score the ball. Now, we know that LeBron James figures out adjustments better than anybody. He's a basketball savant. We respect that. But there was a three-game losing streak for a reason. They were struggling to score the ball. And if you can't score, obviously that means you're missing shots. You're missing shots. That leads to rebounds. That leads to breaks. That leads to open shots. The Lakers can't defend and contain a Damian Lillard if you're not making shots on the offensive side of the ball. And that's something we have to consider.
I agree with that. I'll say this, too. Go ahead, Vince.
No, go ahead. You can finish.
I would say this, too. Who's the best player in the bubble right now? The best player in the bubble right now, the way they played recently, is Damian Lillard. Lillard is, if we had to say who's been the MVP of the bubble, pretty obviously Damian Lillard.
And or Devin
really,
Booker.
What's the only...
Or Devin Booker.
Booker's been great. You're right. Booker giving him run. But if I had to choose, I'm going to take Lillard. And Booker's been great. And the Suns have been really good. But with no Steph Curry, Lillard is basically now Steph Curry. You know, like, you're compared to your peers and who else is around you. That really determines your value. How are you, not just in a vacuum, but compared to everyone else? Compared to everyone else in this bubble, Lillard is elevated even beyond where he would normally be elevated, partly because there aren't some other guys playing, partly because he's elevated his game, and partly because he now has a supporting cast that is capable of keeping him right there so he can not only carry them, but actually win the game in the end. So I'm not sleeping on how live they are. It's a weird season and they are live, but they're also giving up a whole lot of points every night and it's coming down to the wire. And that defensive issue should be cause enough for concern for Portland fans and enough kind of a reason for hope for Lakers fans that it would go the Lakers' way in the first round. I think it would. I'm not sure that's a seven-game series. I'd take the Lakers in six or seven games, but I think it would be tough.
Yeah, I thought six games as well. And an alarming number to me is that 28% three-point shooting. So if you're feeding AD in the post and you know that three-point percentage is at 28%, I'm going to double and make him pass the ball out and make them shoot threes until they prove otherwise. Now, on the other side of the ball, we watched Dame come in pick and roll against Dallas, and the bigs were sitting back, and he was feasting at the three-point line time after time, every play down the court. And I was going crazy because I'm like, now, let's step up. Step up, have your bigs, get the ball out of his hands, and you're making Nurkic. You're making Collins. Whiteside, you're making these guys have to score two-point baskets instead of three-point baskets because Dame is on fire behind the three-point line. CJ, as well as Carmelo, are shooting the three-point shot extremely well. So if I'm going to lose this series, I'm going to lose it to their bigs, not to their trio.
Hey, Molly Karam here, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. We all know breakfast is part of your day, but sometimes when you're traveling for business, you end up staying at a hotel that doesn't offer any, and you know what happens. You grab a cup of coffee, you skip the meal entirely. We've all been there. But if you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you can enjoy their free Bright Side breakfast featuring delicious baked goods, fruit, eggs, yogurt, even waffles. And really, who doesn't want to start their day with a fresh hot waffle? Come on. Tonight, La Quinta, tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com. To college football we go. The Big Ten becomes the first Power Five conference to postpone its fall sports season. In a statement, the conference said it will evaluate the possibility of competition in the spring. The Pac-12 CEO group voted Tuesday to also cancel fall sports shortly after and will look at options to play in the spring as well. Ohio State quarterback Fields tweeting, shaking my head, not happy about it. Remember that he used to play in Georgia. Maybe he wish he stayed. Illinois wide receiver Trayvon Sidney, I just don't get how playing football isn't safe, but attending classes is. If the season is canceled because they're looking out for our health, how is attending classes not worse? I'm not safe to be around the same people who are tested constantly, but I'm safe around many different peers. Now, the ACC and SEC are still planning to charge on with football this fall as of now. On that note, we bring in Paul Feinbaum. Check out him every day on the Paul Feinbaum Show, 3 to 7 Eastern, SEC Network, and ESPN Radio. Paul, I'll get to you in just a moment. Max, you're up first. Tell me this. Are the Big Ten and Pac-12 right to postpone college football?
Of course. How can you play under these circumstances? And by the way, the players who are noticing, the student athletes who are noticing that classes will be open and students will be sitting there, they're 100% right. But it's not that they should also be playing football. It's that classes probably shouldn't be open. You can do that when you've gotten something under control. The pandemic is not under control. It's worse here than anywhere in the world. That's why Americans wonder why you can't travel abroad or haven't been able to for such a long time. It's because for the first time in my lifetime, countries around the world say, no, we can't take Americans. There's a pandemic in America, in the United States of America. And that's because of the federal government's disastrous and irresponsible response to this disease, to this virus. So if the athletes are not wrong that there's somewhat of a double standard being applied, or at least they noticed an inconsistency, or that are pointing out, hey, if we don't play, you shouldn't be in class. They're right about that. I know that schools are reopening. They already, some of them have to close. A school in Georgia had to close. There's an outbreak. And of course, it's very important to get kids back in school generally, not just in college, but especially younger kids. But it may simply not be sustainable at this point. You need to adopt policies and practices that make that sustainable. We haven't done that. And so I expect all the other conferences to follow eventually, probably sooner than later. But as of right now, the conferences that shut it down first actually look, no one looks like a grown-up here because they waited so long, but at least they look like more grown-up, or they look more grown-up than the other conferences. And I understand also postponing instead of canceling, even if you say, well, maybe it's worse in the spring. Hopefully not. But why make an irrevocable decision that eliminates any possibility at this point? Why not at least keep a tiny little window open, right? So say, well, we can't do this now, obviously. That's responsible. Maybe we could do it in the spring. I think they're right, and I think everyone will soon follow.
The bottom line is that these universities are looking at it, and Paul, I'm going to give you the floor. I'm going to be real quick here. You can correct me if I'm wrong. I think the priority here for the universities, the presidents, the chancellors, and people like that, is to avoid giving the student athlete much more fodder to make the claim that they are employees and not amateurs. That is what, to me, this is all about. Because when a player themselves makes the argument that if the students can come back on campus and go to class and all of that stuff, why can't we play? That's a legitimate question, because I remember just days ago, I had somebody who's an expert in collective bargaining negotiations and beyond explain to me that if the students are not on campus, but the student athletes are on campus, then their argument to be treated as employees, thereby requiring equitable compensation and things of that nature, is buffered. Whereas if the student athletes are on campus with the students, then the institutions can get away with maintaining amateur status. And as a result, that increases their chances of ultimately playing football. So if you're going to allow the students on, it would seem to be reasonable that you would still have football because you have the students on campus. So why not have the student athletes? So if you are the Big Ten, the Pac-12, the Big 12, the SEC, the ACC, and this is such a primary concern of yours, what is the explanation for that? I think the explanation for that is that they are guarding themselves against liability, and they are guarding themselves, equally as important, they are guarding themselves against buffering any argument to the student athlete that they are amateurs as opposed to being employees and thereby requiring some more compensation. I think that's what they're fighting right now. I think that's what this is about in my estimation, Paul. I recognize the fact that I could be wrong, but I don't think so.
You are correct. You have broken the code, Stephen A. For all the conversation about medical experts and epidemiologists and all of this that we're 5 months into right now on the day, it's about the legal aspect of it. From the student aspect, you're right. I don't think it's necessarily overriding everything else, but the late entry into this conversation from the students demanding a voice has scared a lot of administrators. But what I think ultimately will shut this down is the liability issue. And I think it got worse yesterday for the three remaining Power Five conferences. If the Big Ten and the Pac-12 say, we don't think it's safe, then do you want to be the commissioner of one of those other three conferences if something terrible happens, if you have a cataclysmic event on your campus, heaven forbid? Try going into court and saying, well, we thought it was okay. And then the plaintiff bring in witnesses from the medical team of the Pac-12 and the Big Ten. So there are so many things at work here. I think the other three conferences are also posturing right now. They saw the reaction yesterday and the day before. They heard Ryan Day and James Franklin and Jim Harbaugh speak out very eloquently for their young players. They've seen the tweets from Justin Fields and Trevor Lawrence. They heard the maniacal ranting yesterday of Scott Frost and the Nebraska chancellor threatening to go find someplace else to go and forfeiting $52 million in television money a year, of course. They're waiting it out. I think they're also waiting, guys, and Molly, for students to start flooding into the campuses, which they are right now. And one would be aspirational and say it's going to go great, adding 20 or 30,000 students on any campus in the South or in the East, but it's probably not going to go very well. And the second that they have issues on those campuses, Max, to your point, I think the presidents will shut the campuses down, and then the domino effect will happen. The rest of college football will shut down as well.
Paul, Max, I wanted to share something with both of y'all that I've been thinking, and it's just my opinion, obviously, but I really wanted to hear what y'all thought about this. One of the things that I religiously talk about is the need to play chess as opposed to checkers, particularly when it comes to the African-American community. A lot of times when we are criticized for being too emotional without a strategy. And why do I bring that up in this particular instance? When the whole George Floyd murder went down, because that's what the hell it was murder. When that went down, okay, what you see was just obviously just social justice really come to the forefront. And we saw voices coming out of the woodwork that we had never heard before. Why is this relevant? Because in the sport of college football, in my estimation, what you pointed to, Paul, although it was on a completely different issue, when you saw college athletes speaking up and speaking out and making demands, this pandemic coming down the pike and obviously the repercussions to follow, as we're now seeing, when you speak about those university presidents, chancellors, etc., being fearful of the athletes having a voice, the Trevor Lawrence, the Justin Fields of the world saying, we want to play, we want to play, we want to play, stuff like that. I'm saying they didn't forget the voices that they were hearing just weeks earlier and some of the demands emanating from that because of the social justice issues that we were all addressing ad nauseum over the national airwaves and beyond. I think that fear also transitioned to this because they constantly think about quelling and stymieing the potency and the power of others rather than doing what's right. What do you guys say to that?
Paul, do you want to comment or should I go?
Go ahead, Max. I'm eager to hear what you say.
I think that may play into it, but I think, Stephen A., your original point, I was talking about that same point yesterday as it relates to why you can't do a bubble in college football, right? Because then you have to make it at least I think it's 51% of the student body needs access to the same things the athletes have, or else you consider them labor. So I think your first point is really whatever other influences there are, your first point is the deciding factor. Like, take that away and maybe we're in a different situation. The issue is there, the hypocrisy of college sports has been laid bare through this whole process. However much they want to talk about student athletes, when there's this much money at stake, of course it's about the money. And yet they don't want to say and set precedent now, okay, it's really unpaid labor. They're really workers. They want to avoid that at all costs. And in fact, I think that's foolish. I wouldn't let that animate my thinking were I in charge or in a position of authority in college football. I would instead try to get out in front of that issue so when things get back to as normal as possible, that's been addressed and it doesn't bring down the whole system. So I hear what you're saying. I'll bet you that's in the air, but I think your original point is actually the thing that decided events.
Stephen A., Max, I do like what you said, Stephen A., because I think that was the first chapter of this long, hot summer. And for all the window dressing that I hear from college leaders, and they will overwhelm you, they will suffocate you, and yes, they will nauseate you with their kowtowing, but I really don't think they believe it. And Stephen A., I don't think you do either. They talk about listening to the student athlete, but there was a call the other day between the Pac-12 players and Larry Scott, and almost everyone on that call from the athlete standpoint said he wasn't listening to us because he doesn't really care. He wants to make his $5.5 million a year. He wants to make billions from TV, and he wants to put up with what happens in the rest of his environment and empire. And I don't know where it's going to go, Stephen A., but I think the two things that are happening here are the demand for equality from the George Floyd standpoint, the social justice standpoint, and the demand for money. And if both happen, and I think both will happen, it is going to shatter the model of college athletics as we see it today. And a year from now, if we're having the same conversation, we are going to be looking at a repurposed intercollegiate athletic situation. And it's desperately needed. It's time to blow it up. We don't have enough time in this segment to go through all the machinations of that. But that's what scares the people in the ivory towers. Their day of reckoning has arrived.
Brought to you by the Capital One Venture X Card. Earn unlimited 2x miles in everything you buy and turn everyday purchases into extraordinary trips. Plus, receive premium travel benefits like access to over 1,300 airport lounges and a $300 annual credit for bookings through Capital One Travel. Unlock a whole new world of travel with a Capital One Venture X Card. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Lounge access is subject to change. See CapitalOne.com for details.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. The Dallas Cowboys made some news by drafting Oklahoma standout receiver CeeDee Lamb to their already potent offense. Well, Stephen A. Smith, I have a gem for you from the Hall of Famer Michael Irvin on your favorite franchise in America. Please buckle up for this. Quote, what the Cowboys did in the 2020 NFL draft by adding CeeDee Lamb to the number one offense in the National Football League, what Will McClay did, what Jerry Jones, those guys did, what Mike McCarthy did by adding this guy CeeDee Lamb is akin or almost tantamount to Kevin Durant being added to a 73-win Warriors team. Stephen A., CeeDee Lamb is the new KD. The floor is yours, sir.
You know, Molly, there is a person by the name of Galen Gordon. He's the vice president, you know, for talent, for talent and management.
Yeah, at NFL Network.
An exceptional producer that has worked in this business for years. He's now head of talent over there at the NFL Network. He's doing a great job. I love him. He's like a little brother to me. We're very close. I'm bringing up his name for a reason, Molly, because I want to put him on blast right now by calling for him to suspend Michael Irvin indefinitely. I'm calling for the suspension of Michael Irvin. I want him off the air. I want him off social media. I want him away from the public until he officially apologizes to America for the blasphemy that he just articulated to the world. The Cowboys, excuse me, tantamount to Kevin Durant going to the Golden State Warriors. First things first, playmaker, three-time Super Bowl champion, Hall of Famer, the gold jacket, one of the ultimate leaders that we have ever seen in professional sports. That same Michael Irvin, that champion, that exceptional NFL analyst, that man that is made for TV, no matter how much he sweats, this dude with a straight face, because I know he did it with a straight face, okay? This dude goes on social media and articulates that quote. I'm sorry. Correct me if I'm wrong, Molly and Max. When Kevin Durant arrived at that 73-win Warriors team, weren't they fresh off a Game 7 in the NFL Finals? I believe that answer is yes. Did not the season before they win an NBA championship? I believe that answer is yes. Because they followed up the championship with a Game 7 in the NBA Finals, that means they had a back-to-back trips to the NBA Finals. The Cowboys haven't been to the NFC Championship game since 1995. I mean, a quarter century. It's been a quarter century. 25 years, Michael Irvin, that these brothers have won more than one playoff game in a year. Okay? One. That's it. I mean, they haven't done it. In 25 years, it hasn't happened. And you're going to compare Cowboys picking up CeeDee Lamb to Kevin Durant, who, by the way, is money, had about 9-10 years in the NBA, averaging 27 again, was a league MVP and a scoring champion before he ever arrived. So not only did I bring up championships, I also brought up resumes. Once again, there is somebody that was wearing a Cowboy uniform, and this is the shame of it all. It's bad enough Michael Irvin contaminates his zoot suits that he already wears with blue and white pom-poms every day. But then to come back with this blasphemous, erroneous, patently false statements about the Cowboys, trying to buffer them up, it is shameful. Galen Gordon, suspend this man. I don't want to see him on the air. I don't want to see him in social media until he publicly apologizes for the blasphemous statement he said about the irrelevant, pathetic, moribund Dallas Cowboys. What the hell have they done? We know that Jerry's got a fabulous yacht, and it's good. We're hearing that we're going to see him for the first time today. He's been out. There's an APB that's been out for him for a few months. It's good to hear that we're going to see him at 12 noon. But we ain't seen the Cowboys relevant in a postseason picture for 25 years. Last point, 25 years ago, y'all, I had an afro, and my hairline was about here. That's all I got to say about that.
The only thing I can think of, because Michael Irvin's one of my favorite people in this business, Stephen A., the only thing I can think is that maybe the playmaker thinks that almost tantamount means nothing near. Maybe that could explain this statement. How is this like KD? You know, this is how, Stephen A. Michael Irvin does not hide the fact that he is just rooting for the Cowboys. I remember when I was like 16 years old, the Yankees signed Mel Hall, left fielder from Cleveland. And he was all right. He was, you know, a guy could hit a fastball. And, but, you know, not an all-star or anything. And I remember arguing with, like, kids who were Mets fans at the time. Mel Hall's going to drive in 120 runs in that Yankees lineup. He didn't have 120 RBIs. Might have had it over two seasons. Like, you know, because when you're a homer and you got those goggles on, that's how you see it. So we have to, like, run that through the translation, right? Whatever Michael Irvin says about the Cowboys, cut it in half. It's like KD joining the Warriors. Well, which team was half as good as the Warriors, and which player was half as good as KD? You know, it's not even Tobias Harris joining the Sixers. I don't know. It's like Julius Randle joining the Knicks. You know, something like that. But you have to run it through the Michael Irvin right. translator to understand what he could possibly be saying.
It's inexcusable. It's inexcusable, and I'm telling you right now, I'm just sick of it. See, this is the kind of stuff, you know, I'll give him credit for this. He reminds me of why I hate Cowboy fans so much. He reminds me of why, and that's what he is. He's a fan. I know he's a Hall of Famer. I know he's a three-time champion. He's all of those things. But right now, he's a fan. He's not objective. There's no objective sense to what he said. CeeDee Lamb has a play, and I know the brother's bad. The brother can ball. Please don't get me wrong. But there is nothing. He doesn't have an NBA resume yet. And the Dallas Cowboys certainly haven't had a championship in 25 years. Not even more than a wild card playoff win in the last 25 years. How in the hell are you going to compare Kevin Durant going to the 73-win Golden State Warriors to that? It's the Dallas Cowboys, typical Dallas Cowboy fan, Molly, where they sit up there and say, you know, they lose. They could go 1-15. Their season can end on January 3rd at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern time. And by 7:15, you know we're going to win the Super Bowl next year, right? I can't stand them. They just make me
Stephen
sick.
Stephen A., hold up.
Oh, those Cowboys.
But Michael Irvin sure is entertaining.
And he, that's what he
totally
does.
This is not totally true.
Michael Irvin does this, man. They're pathetic.
Let me play devil's advocate, though, and use your term against you. Maybe we're the ones that are going to look like Boo Boo the Fool. Because why is Michael Irvin a Hall of Famer? As a wide receiver. CeeDee Lamb's a wide receiver. Maybe he's that good.
Best
and we just
draft.
Don't know. And Michael's ahead of the curve.
Hold on. Hold on. I'm not questioning the greatness of CeeDee Lamb, particularly coupled with Gallup and Amari Cooper. What I'm trying to say is this. There was Emmitt Smith, there was Troy Aikman, and the playmaker. And guess what? Your stiff competition was the San Francisco 49ers. This year, they got San Fran, they got the Rams, they got Seattle, they got Green Bay, they got the Eagles, they got the Saints, they got Tom Brady and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That's a lot of stuff to get through when you ain't won in 25 years.
Molly, a true, if you really want to look at what he said, it basically, he's saying the Cowboys are the number one offense, just like the Warriors were the number one offense. And they're adding the best guy in the draft, just like the Warriors added the best guy in free agency. The difference, of course, the most objectionable thing isn't even comparing CeeDee Lamb to Kevin Durant, because Mike Lurvin might think that he's the next great receiver, right? And going to be the best in the game or one of the two or three best in the game. The issue is comparing the Dallas Cowboys to the Warriors. That's really the objectionable part of what he said.
I was just
right. Okay, so the Dallas Cowboys were
playing devil's advocate.
Let me end it by saying this way. Hold on, Max. Let me end it by saying this. One of the bad parts about the whole Rona going on right now is that we can't have a show at Texas Live where he says something so stupid, so asinine, and a whole bunch, three levels of fans are packed inside of Texas Live, cheering him on, acting like they right, only to go out that night and lose the way the Cowboys
like that
have lost to the
Tennessee
Titans.
They appreciate it.
That night that Michael Irvin swore they was going to win. That's one of the bad parts about this, because I wish they were all around cheering them on, Michael, so I could tell them all, shut up and sit down. Dallas Cowboy fans make me sick.
It was all
I can't
good just
stand
a year
any
ago.
Of them. And that's exactly what Michael Irvin is. He is a Cowboy fan. All his football objectivity goes
all
out
right,
the way.
Southern
Galen
Steve.
Gordon, suspend that man.
Hey, I'm Molly Karam, and thanks so much for listening to the First Take podcast. You can now stream the most MLB games on DirecTV without a satellite dish. Yes, catch the clutch hits, strikeouts, grand salamis, web gems with nothing on your roof. So whoever's up there, whether it's roofers, Santa, birds, old-time chimney sweepers, moody teenagers, thrill-seeking raccoons, you name it, they won't find a satellite dish, but you will find your MLB games on DirecTV. That means DirecTV is your home for baseball this season. Root with nothing on your roof. Yes, stream your team. Call 1-800-DIRECTV or visit directtv.com to sign up today. Claim based on the total games carried on sports networks. Sports availability varies by zip code and requires choice package. Thanks so much for listening to the First Take Pod. Have a fabulous day. Meanwhile, with the potential of spring college football, let's take a look at Todd McShay's just released way too early 2021 mock draft. Clemson quarterback Trevor Lawrence is likely to be the number one overall pick and as of now should be playing this fall. Meanwhile, Todd has Ohio State quarterback Justin Fields who won't be playing this fall, going fourth overall to the Panthers. It is so wonderful to welcome in our draft expert, Todd McShay. And Todd, it's great to have you back with us, back on television, sir. So thank you so much for the time. Let's get right after it. You know where I'm going to start, with these conferences. So it's been announced thus far that the Big Ten, obviously, and the Pac-12 will not be playing this fall. So what kind of impact is this going to have on players like a Justin Fields in this upcoming draft?
It'll be interesting to see. I mean, if you're Justin Fields, you're going to now probably go 15 months without playing a competitive football game, and then you're just kind of thrust into your rookie season in the NFL. And for NFL evaluators, it becomes so tricky. Think about it. If you're a general manager, you're a GM sitting there with the number one overall pick, or you're Carolina's general manager sitting at 4, or the Chicago Bears general manager sitting at 14, you need a quarterback. Right now, two of the top three quarterbacks, the guys that I projected the first round, we got Trevor Lawrence, who, as you mentioned, is going to play as of right now for Clemson in the ACC. But Justin Fields is not going to play in the Big Ten. And Trey Lance, the guy that gets overlooked in all this, quarterback coming out of North Dakota State where Carson Wentz came out of, he's going to be a first-round pick, but he's also not going to be able to play for a 15-month span. So it makes it very tricky for evaluators to look at this, especially with Fields only being a one-year starter and Lance only being a one-year starter coming out of a small school level, you want more game tape evaluation on them, and the quarterbacks want more time to take snaps under center from shotgun and just get that game experience. It's so invaluable, and it really does correlate to NFL success, guys who have more experience traditionally, if you study the history of it, playing the quarterback position and then transitioning to the NFL. So it stunts their development. It's tough for evaluators, and nobody's happy. I mean, the conferences are losing money. At ESPN, we're losing all this inventory in games. The players want to play. The coaches want to play. But some very difficult decisions had to be made because of COVID and everything that we're going through. And the doctors basically stepped in and gave information to the decision makers. And they took that information and said, you know what? As much as we need the money, as much as we know everyone wants to play college football, we just can't do it in this current environment.
Todd, I want to transition to, I want to stay on, you know, some of the decisions that were made, or specifically the decision that was made by the Big Ten and Pac-12 yesterday to take away football for the rest of the year.
Yep.
What do you make and what can you explain to us the difference between the Big Ten and the Pac-12 making their decision and what we appear to be seeing with the ACC and the SEC in terms of their intent to go on? How can you explain that to the average viewer out there that was looking forward to college football and you got two conferences at least that's saying we plan on moving full steam ahead while two others have said we're canceling the season? And I'm talking about of the Big Five, like revenue generating conferences.
Right.
Explain that.
Yeah, Stephen, it's hard to explain because there's no governing body. I mean, there is the NCAA, but each conference makes its own decisions. And I think more so than ever, we're seeing where the lack of leadership. Now, each conference has its leadership, but there's no one making a decision like you see in the NFL or the NBA, where the league offices are making decisions that, hey, we're going to play. We plan on playing. These are the things that we're going to put in place to protect our players. This is how we're going to approach the season. It doesn't occur in the NCAA because there's no true governing body when it comes to these sorts of things. Yes, the NCAA will hand down sanctions. They'll suspend players and all that. But where have they been during this process? You know, what's their role in the decision making? That part's confusing even to me. And I spend all this time, you know, working on college football and being part of the process. So to me, the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12, they're holding out hope. And they're hoping as we continue to get closer that they're going to get better news about the prognosis. And the one thing I'll say is for the Big Ten and the Pac-12, why not push it back a month? Why not just wait? If you're not ready to say, yes, we can play now, can you definitively say in a month from now we couldn't play an 8-game conference season, crown a champion, and be a part of the national championship process? Listen, I do applaud them for making this difficult decision. As I said before, everyone involved wants to play college football, and they had to make the brutal decision of saying, no, we can't do it. But what's the harm in waiting just another month or so and seeing if we can put together a condensed schedule to have all five power conferences, if you will, involved in this process?
I would say, Todd, it's because the health experts and science says that's likely to be impossible. My question, I guess, is something along the lines of Stephen A., that in a month to play football is, without bubbles and stuff, is impossible. Excuse me. Mic fell. sorry about that. Mic fell. I would say that the answer to that, why not just wait a month, is because according to health and medical experts and the science, it appears impossible without a bubble. Dr. Fauci came out and said, even on a professional level, if you want to play football, you have to have a bubble. Otherwise, you can't do it in a pandemic. My question is something along the lines of Stephen A's. Why do you think, like, what's the difference? Is it regional? Is it political affiliation where one region is more susceptible to kind of wishful thinking? Go ahead.
Yeah, I think you're exactly right. It's wishful thinking, and it's the passion. And listen, I might upset fans of Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State. They're unbelievable fans. There are some great fans in the Pac-12 as well. But It is a different animal. I travel around every single year, going to games and all these different conferences. It is a different priority in the the southeast of the United States, in the south, and in the southwest as well. It really is. And that's the bottom line. I'm convinced of that. Yeah. No one's going to come out and say it. But you're hearing all the coaches come out in the SEC. You're hearing everyone come out and say, you know, we're going to play. We're ready to play. And a lot of the Big Ten coaches were saying the same thing. We heard from Jim Harbaugh, Scott Frost as well. So the passion is all there. But in the South especially, it's just different. The priority is different. There's so much more pressure. And I think that's why the ACC, the SEC, the Big 12 are sitting there with their decision makers saying, we're getting the same medical information, because I know this for a fact. The medical doctors are meeting on a weekly basis, all five power conferences. So that same medical information is there, and I think they're just hoping and holding out and knowing that the pressure is so great to play football that they may look at all the information, the same information that the Big Ten looked at and the Pac-12 looked at and said, you know what, we understand it. But everyone wants to play, and we're going to move forward with it. If that's what happens, it will be because of their passion, their love of the game, and just refusing to give in to the medical information.
And also the love of money. Todd, I'm so glad you made that distinction, though, because I brought that up earlier with Paul. It is the same medical advice, yet we're coming to these different decisions. I have another question for you, though. Do you think it's fair to these Big Ten and ACC players if there was a scenario where the Pac-12, the Big Ten and the Pac-12, if they had to play two seasons essentially in 2021, so we're talking, okay, now they're going to play in the spring to make up for this season, and then they're going to play again in the fall?
I think it's crazy. I think it's an absolute waste of time, and I think it's wrong to put the players in that position. Listen, I love college football as much as anyone. I would watch every single game. I would probably be out covering games with our crew. But the bottom line is this. You can't ask young men, grown men, whatever it is, you can't ask them to play a 10, 12, 13-game season in the spring. Finish up in what? March, April? And then all of a sudden have to turn around in August and be back in camp to play games in that first weekend of September. You're talking about 3-4 months between two seasons and potentially, you know, up to 28, 30 games. You can't ask players to go through that. There's a reason football has such a long offseason. You need that time to recuperate. You need that time to rebuild. You need that time to get stronger and work on the game. And you can't do that. That's why I'm convinced. Like, if you think of college football in the spring, take Trevor Lawrence out, take Justin Fields out, take the wide receivers at Alabama that are going to be the next two first-rounders, Devontae Smith and Jalen Waddle, take them out. Take out Travis Etienne, the best running back in the country. Every single big name that you can list off right now, write it down on a piece of paper and put a big X across it, because they're not going to play. And I would guess over 100 players that are draft-eligible prospects would decide, you know what, I've got to focus on the draft, and I can't play an 8-10-game season and be ready to play my rookie year in the NFL.
Well, Todd, let me ask you this. So if that's the case, and I'm listening to what you're saying, the Big Ten and the Pac-12 are going to be without football, period, because it makes no sense. They can't have a football season this year. If that's the case, but the ACC and the SEC goes ahead and has football, what does that do for their conference? What does it do for the Big Ten and Pac-12 if they don't have football, while two other conferences elected to have football?
Well, the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, clearly it's their right to try to play football in the spring. And if they do, then the players will have to decide whether they want to play or not. What it does is it puts, in my opinion, these players in the Big Ten and the Pac-12 at a competitive disadvantage. If they're playing in the spring and you're telling me the other three conferences decide to play in the fall, now everyone in the SEC, the ACC, and the Big 12, all those players are able to get the correct amount of rest and off-season process to rebuild their bodies, whereas the other two conferences, you know, it's kind of a rush to try to get back. Plus the fact, as I mentioned, it's going to be such a diluted season if you're talking about playing the Pac-12 and the Big Ten in the spring, because so many players. I mean, just from those two conferences alone, I would guess maybe 40 to 50 of some of the best players in those conferences, and the top quarterbacks and the top running backs are going to say, thanks, I love you, teammates, but I have to do what's right for me. I can't put myself at risk. And from a draft standpoint and from being ready for my rookie season in the NFL, I think we would see a really diluted product in the spring if they decide to play football.
Have you ridden an electric e-bike yet? You need to check out Lectric e-bikes today, the number one selling e-bike in America. Two things stand out that bikers love about Lectric. Number one, the majority of their models come pre-assembled, so you don't need to be a bike savant to ride them. Number two, Lectric wants to empower riders to spend more time exploring outside on their bikes, so they've made range a priority. Long-range batteries allow riders to hit typically around 65 miles of range or up to 150 miles on some models. Bonus, Lectric has purposefully priced their bikes to be affordably awesome, so you don't have to break the bank to get these sweet rides. See why people who have made the switch to electric bikes have fallen in love with biking again by visiting electricebikes.com. That's L-E-C-T-R-I-C ebikes.com.